All right, we're back. My name is Seth Juarez. We're here at ChefConf. If you have any questions to ask, and I have tons that I can ask, but your questions are obviously more important, just tweet them to the hashtag ChefConfLive, and I will scan for them as we speak. We have a very special guest. Tell us who you are and what you do, my friend.
I am Nicole Forsgren. I am Director of Organizational Performance and Analytics at Chef. Mm-hmm. The joke is that I rub science on things.
Nice.
Yes.
She is doctor, okay? I'm going to throw that in because she won't. Dr. Forsgren.
Thank you. What
did you study in school?
So I have a PhD in MIS from University of Arizona.
Okay.
Go Wildcats, top five program. And really my expertise and my specialty for years was on, since about 07, so I'm coming up on that decade, which is great. It's really on the factors, the technological factors, the organizational factors, and the processes that can predict success outcomes in software development and delivery. All right, that's the academic term, but really, if you like, map all that out and draw it, that's DevOps.
It's like the sciencey term for DevOps.
Right.
And I love science. So here's my problem. Look, we have been preached to from the dev side, I'm sure from the IT side, the other side of the wall. We're friendly, but from a distance. I don't know why that is.
We're cautiously friendly, right? It's like, yeah. I'm a little concerned because there's ambiguity, there's risk.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you were telling me before that like your background is kind of dev.
Yeah.
I was a software engineer for a hot minute, and then I did more ops.
Right.
So like, you're dev, I'm ops, right? So it's like, you're cool, but I'm worried because you're gonna break my stuff.
I'm gonna break your stuff.
Yeah.
Like I'm going in there and I'm like, look at all this new stuff, and you're thinking you're gonna break my stuff.
Yeah.
And who's on the line? Because I'll be like, oh, as the IT guy, I works on my machine.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about, and hopefully this will be more sort of getting your insight that you've learned. Mm-hmm. The thing as a dev is I've been preached to that they said DevOps is people, process, products, and that the DevOps is something you should be doing, and you should rub the DevOps jam all over your sandwich, and you should have it everywhere.
And I'm just like, trust me, it'll be fine.
What is it?
Everything's gonna be fine.
Can you tell me what it is and how I can start to sort of be more amenable to DevOps as part of a discipline of software engineering?
So that's a lot of things, right?
I know, that's why we have a half hour.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, that's all we need, right?
Sit down, make yourself comfortable, get some popcorn.
Yeah.
Right?
So how do I start to think about this as a developer?
As a developer. So DevOps is a few things. Okay, so let's go back to like, as a developer, you're probably comfortable and used to thinking about Agile, right? So you had this new methodology that was dissimilar from things like Waterfall, where there was like this large planning process, you had a big document, you coded exactly what you needed, and then you handed it off. Okay, then you had Agile, where you worked closer with the business, you did a bunch of sprints, you handed off code every couple of weeks. So that's closer, right? We're moving closer to DevOps.
Right.
The challenge with Agile is that it doesn't inherently scale. Here's the problem. You're handing off code faster, which is better. You're working closer with the business to develop things that hopefully deliver value.
Sure.
What happens though is you're delivering code faster. Pieces of code faster and faster and faster. These pieces of code are piling up at the feet of your IT operations staff.
Right.
You're just throwing stuff over the wall faster. You're just throwing more stuff over the wall faster.
Right.
That needs supported and or is going to break something. So this is where DevOps helps.
Okay.
So what is DevOps? DevOps is a set of technical practices, a set of management practices, process practices, a wide-ranging cultural movement. And we say cultural, and some people like start rolling their eyes at me because I like talk about culture a lot. But it's important because, so Agile helped because it was, in some ways, development reaching up the stack to talk to business and product to understand what needs to happen, but they weren't necessarily reaching over or through that wall to talk to operations to understand what needed to happen.
I see.
And so you need to have that culture or communication or vocabulary or something so that we can understand better what needs to happen. Because, so you just said a minute ago, trust me, the code's gonna work, it works on my box. It works in my environment, it works on my machine, it works where I'm doing my thing. And ops says, but it doesn't work where I'm doing my thing. Or even if it does work, it doesn't work for long, right? Because developers don't necessarily always think about, because they weren't, it's not part of your training, it's not part of your background, it's fine.
It's not for me.
It's totally understandable.
Yeah.
But operations staff think this way because this is what we do, is we manage and maintain systems at scale. So your code might be amazing on one or two or a few boxes, but it might not be quite as amazing at scale. So it might break when you start thinking about scalable systems.
I think the word you're looking for is not as amazing, but it sucks when you scale it.
I'm trying to be nice.
She's trying to be nice, right? So you talk about...
But that's where another problem happens, right? Is when the operations staff comes and they're trying to be nice, but at 3 o'clock in the morning or several 3 o'clocks in the morning, they keep being woken up. And so they show up on a Monday when you finally show up, right? And they're like, your stuff broke my system.
They're trying to be nice.
Yeah. Right? You broke my system again. And you're like, whoa. Like, where is this coming from?
Where's the angriness? Yeah.
And you don't realize, right? And so then it's like.
So is DevOps a way to sort of lessen the pain on the operations side then?
Yeah, so we always talk about breaking down silos, right? So it's helping not have developers on their own, testers on their own, QA on their own, security on their own, ops on their own. Like, pull together a cross-functional team, which almost makes me laugh, right? It's like 80s and 90s matrix organizations all over again.
Yeah.
But it's for a purpose, right? Pulling everyone together so you can have a conversation and have everyone involved in the design together so that dev and ops can pull together so that if something happens, it's not just dev saying, oh great, so now I have to support my code. No, maybe you can help out in the support and on some of the on-call, or be very aware of the on-call so that you can realize and have some empathy. You're waking people up. And why are you waking people up?
Right.
Because of scalability. What part of scalability? How can you build that into your code better? Dear operations, okay, so scalability is a thing. How can you help developers understand that better so that you're not just yelling at them all the time or being annoyed at them all the time? How can you help improve the process, maybe help with the design process, maybe help create some pre-approved testing libraries that they can use? And like, sure, sorry, you didn't go to school to be a coder. But some level of, if you are asking them to keep scalability and infrastructure in mind, it is then fair for them to ask you to do some coding.
Right.
There's some training that happens there, and it makes everyone's jobs better, everyone's lives better. That's culture. That's communication, that's collaboration. You're starting to share some vocabulary.
So is it like the love, peace movement of the 60s? Transplanted into the teens of the 2000s, and now we just let's just love one another right now, man, and have a communication.
Right.
So would you say that the rise of DevOps is more of a technical challenge because of we need stuff faster, or is it more of a social challenge because we could have had this before?
So I think it really falls along a few axes. So one is absolutely technical. Although, like, don't use that as an excuse, because we've seen it on brownfield systems, right? Greenfield technology will be easier because it's easier to move at velocity.
Sure.
It's easier to move faster with greenfield technologies, fast systems. But, you know, Gary Gruber and his colleagues did it at HP LaserJet on firmware. So you can do it on old systems.
They did DevOps on firmware?
Firmware.
Did I hear
Google
that
it.
Right?
Oh, Gary Gruber. Gruver, HP LaserJet firmware. It's amazing.
Wow.
But it's going to be easier on certain technologies that help you move faster, that
are
fast development. You also need good process, right? So having agile processes, implementing WIP limits, using dashboards and visualizations, using good monitoring practices to make business decisions and not just wake you up. Having good cultural practices so that you have that good communication. Using measurement as a piece in it. Of course, metrics go right. I'm going to talk about numbers.
Yeah, the metrics are fantastic.
But metrics help you make decisions that are not just based on gut, because that's lazy and dangerous.
Yeah, because you might have had a bad burrito or something, and
right,
your gut's telling you the wrong thing.
Also, it helps teams if you have numbers and you have a framework and you can talk about the things, you have hypotheses about things that you think will make the product better, or if you have numbers, it avoids finger pointing.
Right.
Because then if something goes wrong, or if we're concerned, or if there's a disagreement, we can talk about the thing and not about each other.
I see. It feels more like a social, like you said, technology, but then
Technology is absolutely important to enable it.
Right.
But you're right, it is also a social movement, because we need people to make technology work.
Okay, so it feels to me a little squishy still. What can I do as a dev? Let's just say I'm making, I don't know, a new Scala something. and I want to be able to make it so that it has the DevOps jam spread all over. What are some things I can do as a developer to start that will sort of enable that process a little bit better?
Okay, so on like the technical practices standpoint, mm-hmm. If you can implement trunk-based development, we know that's a good practice.
What does that mean?
So trunk-based development, having a good like mono repo, which okay. by the way, for some people is controversial. It shouldn't be controversial.
A good model repo.
Mono.
Mono, what is that?
Trunk-based development, so developing code based on trunk, not having a lot of feature branches.
Oh,
checking
I see.
In code daily, using toggles.
So you're talking about like use Git or use some kind of source control. Mm-hmm.
Definitely using version control.
Okay.
What's another one?
It's like the stuff like we feel we know we should be doing,
yes.
but we're not doing it. I wish there was like a...
Well, and not everyone does.
Right.
Right?
I feel like there should be like a checklist that says...
Shifting left on security.
So what does that mean?
So don't just do security at the very end with pen testing. Include security early where InfoSec is involved in the design of the application. They can provide you with pre-approved testing and libraries so that you catch security defects early. Mm-hmm. We actually know that that is predictive of IT performance, where IT performance is both throughput and stability.
I see.
And it's predictive of organizational performance, which is higher profitability, productivity, and market share. So, like, money. Who doesn't like money?
Yeah, I have some dollars.
Yeah. Well, and organizations like that. And this is where it's important. So I'm lead investigator on the largest DevOps studies to date, the State of DevOps Report.
Okay.
And we found in the last 3 years that these things are predictive. So along technical practices, as a dev, start implementing some good solid technical practices, like the ones I just mentioned.
Right.
And those are outlined really explicitly, particularly in the 2015 and the 2016 report.
Right.
Some of the processes that you can use, implement WIP limits. That's also a leading indicator of reducing complexity.
Implement with limits.
WIP limits.
WIP limits.
So WIP,
work in progress. Work in progress,
right.
Yeah.
Don't have a massive backlog. Use visualizations on your work. Decompose your work into small pieces so that you can have that single piece flow. So you should be able to work on a feature or a piece of code that you can get done in a week or less.
I see. Don't do like the whole, this is going to take me 6 months kind
right.
of thing.
Or even 6 weeks.
Because then you've automatically introduced complexity of you're doing too much.
Right, exactly, you're doing too much. And you've then also reduced the likelihood of being able to do trunk-based development. You're gonna check out a feature branch that you're gonna keep on your very own, which is then going to be harder for you to check back into trunk. You're gonna have code remerge and rebasing complications
right.
and issues.
So as a developer, as I'm doing these practices, it feels like just for example with trunk-based development, there's always this fear of, if I put this back in and everything explodes, how do I manage that? Because it feels like DevOps is really good at managing the safe, like everything's butter smooth, but how does it help with the crap that happens?
So you can, well, it's working on getting all of that back into place, right? So there's also automated tests. Write good automated tests. Work on a piece at a time.
So it feels like DevOps is like a lot of the stuff we should be doing. You mentioned this
yes.
report that you all did. What were some of the other findings that were either surprising or that sort of helped along the path of understanding what DevOps is?
So we've also found some really great things in terms of the things that you can accomplish and you can see. So, you know, we've always compared, we have high performers, medium performers, and low performers, because I'm super creative, right?
Yeah.
So we collect metrics and we collect data through this large worldwide survey. So I've got 25,000 data points at this point. So
it really
is industry-wide.
Yeah.
It's been published in peer review. So this is much, much more than just a marketing report.
Sure.
But this last year, we asked people how much of their time, what percentage of their time do they spend on rework? So things that you submit and then you get back and you have to redo.
Uh-huh.
And we find that high performers are spending, I want to say it was about 21% of their time on rework. Low performers are spending, I think, 29% of their time on rework. So think about what you can do in your own work and your own processes to eliminate that rework. You can do things like pair programming. You can even do things like developing better and more comprehensive automated tests. Because there's going to be some amount of rework that you spend every day, right? But if you catch those bugs or defects early, you know, think if you write code and you submit an error, you know, either your peer catches it early or your automated test catches it early. Mm-hmm. How easy is it to fix that? Because it's in your head.
Right.
It's very, very easy. But what if you don't catch that for a week or 6 weeks? You have to reread all that code. I mean, I used to develop, right? It's been a minute. But I have to get my head back in that space of what it was I was trying to do.
Right.
And then I have to remember what my code was doing, remember the context in which my code is operating, and then try to fix that and then resubmit. I spend so much time fixing it. So imagine if I can make myself and my process more efficient, how much time I save my company.
Right.
How much time I save myself. What can I do with that time I save? Okay, first of all, it could just be money and dollars, but also what could I be doing with that day? I could
Right.
be writing more features and more code. I could be doing more awesome things. Sometimes troubleshooting is fun, and sometimes troubleshooting makes me reach for my stress
trouble.
Ball.
It makes right? trouble,
it
yes.
It makes trouble.
Yeah. So as your job at Chef, how does the sort of the report that you made inform sort of the kind of things that you put into the product as Chef?
So it helps us think about, you know, what's important and what types of product decisions do we want to look at and continue validating. So our product team is amazing and fantastic, and we do a really great job of talking to customers and thinking about, you know, what they find valuable and what they find interesting. But it's also a really nice external validation tool. So things like InSpec, you know, we know that that's great, and it's really important to look at compliance as code and include that in the pipeline. But, you know, as a data person, I really like to see things where we have evidence overall from a large population industry, because you'll always have someone come back and say, oh, well, but that only works for that person, or that only works for Alaska Air. That's never going to work for me.
Yes.
So it's amazing, and I love being able to say, you know, yes, that works here. Yes, that works here. It's great to be able to see InSpec and support for InSpec in automation, you know, in that Automate product. And now we can point to the study, and we can say that, you know, because for years we've always heard that, you know, security pen testing at the back is tough, and it's not a good practice, because when you implement it, when you do that pen testing the day before you go live or the week before you go live, you can't fix anything.
Yeah.
But, you know, I always hear people say, but if I include it early, it's going to slow down the development process. It does not slow down the development process. I have 4,607 responses. I have over, you know, 4,600 data points showing it improves IT performance. And high performers versus low performers had 50% less likelihood of having to remediate security defects. So not only do we have several of our customers saying, this is amazing, and we build it into the product and they love it. So we have lots of, at this point, you know, we're kind of, well, so the plural of anecdote isn't data, no. But we've got lots of amazing stories showing that this is fantastic, everyone's loving it, it's really delivering value to these organizations, and now we also have strong predictive evidence showing that it is a serious value add.
That's amazing.
And predicting IT performance and organizational performance.
See, I like that, because just in the case of pen testing, like it's like checking if the horse is in the barn after you left the door open, right? I mean,
right.
It's already out.
Right.
And you got to go chase it now, and what are you going to do with that? So
right.
What are some other observations that you found in this report, which, by the way, hopefully we'll put a link to somewhere.
Yes,
and
we can include the link.
What are some other observations that you found? Because I'm kind of a data guy. I love looking at data and seeing the insights that you've garnered.
Yeah. So one that we found and we verified over 3 years now that I really love is, I've mentioned IT performance, mm-hmm. right? So that we found good statistical validation that as a construct it holds together. So we defined it as, so I was working with, like I said, Gene Kim and Jess Humble and Alana Brown on the team, and it's measured as both throughput and stability. So throughput for us is deployment frequency and lead time for changes. So code commit to code deploy. So Alaska Airlines, I really loved how he said, or no, it was the gentleman at Davi at Westpac who said that it really should be code commit to customer using, but that's a little too hard for me to measure.
Yeah, so, it is.
So we do deployment frequency, how often you deploy your code, and code commit to code deploy. So that's our throughput measure. And for stability measures, we're using mean time to restore and change fail rate.
Change fail rate?
Yes.
Okay.
So how often you introduce code that causes any kind of incident,
got it.
Any kind of downtime. It doesn't have to be all the way down, right? Because we just don't see that anymore.
Yeah.
So here's the interesting thing. We use these two measures because they speak to two different audiences. Speed to deploy and introduce a change is kind of speaking to developers. Mm-hmm. Stability of the environment is speaking to the operations
right.
people.
So it's a good balance.
It's a good balance. It's hard to game that because yeah. it's hard to game two sides of it. It's inherently a tension.
Sure.
Here's the interesting thing that we find. In high performers in particular, and for the most part for the whole set of industry, those two measures move together. They move in tandem.
Interesting, because it feels like everyone's always blaming each other.
Everyone's blaming each
other. But when they do that, both of them go down.
They both go up, they both go down.
Yeah.
As you improve, they both go yeah. up. As you slow down, they both go down. Here's the other thing that's interesting. For years, there's been an implication in the industry. ITIL has implied that you have to throttle one, you have to slow down on your speed in order to get stability. We don't see it. Think about riding your bike really, really, really slow. It doesn't work.
Yeah.
Sure, if you ride your bike out of control, like things are gonna be bad. But if you wanna ride your bike, you need to go fast,
right?
You need to get a certain amount of speed. And so I'm seeing among low performers, if you only deploy once a year, you also don't have amazing stability because think of your infrastructure as a Jenga tower.
Yeah.
Your IT operations people are maintaining this great Jenga tower. And if your developers are releasing this massive ball of Jenga pieces that have been glued together and they throw it on top of your Jenga tower is going to fall.
Right.
And not only that, they have to rebuild it. And then your developers, if a piece of that fails, because it's going to.
Yeah, of course.
Which piece in this ball
is the problem?
Failure?
Yeah.
You don't know. However, if you have a Jenga tower and you're rapidly deploying one piece at a time, the IT operations staff can deal with one piece at a time, and if one piece breaks it, or maybe two pieces at a time, I know which piece caused the failure and I can deal with that.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. And like, it feels like in hindsight, oh yeah, that must be true. It doesn't mean how fast, if you're only deploying once a year, it doesn't mean you're most stable. It might mean you're worse off for the wear.
Right, and that's actually what we see. And that was a really interesting, I mean, like intuitively many of us, well, intuitively, right? Once you see it,
yeah.
it's obvious.
Right.
But for people who aren't quite there yet, it just seems so risky.
Yeah. So we only have about a minute left.
Okay.
Why don't you tell us in summary, what are some tips you have for developers and then for IT people in order to implement sort of these DevOps best practices that you've clearly researched? Mm-hmm.
So, you know, sometimes just start with the basics. Reach out to someone else, see what you can learn from someone else. Listen, and then again, start with the basics, right? Version control, automated tests. That's always one of the best places to start, quite honestly. And then look at your own culture, right? Do you have a high trust environment? How do you feel about sharing what you're doing right now?
Mm-hmm.
Can you implement things that are novel?
I love it. So it's
can
pretty
you
much
take risks.
It feels like, are you feeling comfortable with what you're doing? And are other people feeling comfortable? It's a good barometer of how things are going.
Yep.
Well, it's been super helpful. I have here a trusty pocket monkey for you
as a gift.
Since it seems like you're fixing both the IT and the dev side. Thanks so much for spending some time with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks so much for watching again. We're here at ChefConf Live, talking to industry experts about DevOps and about Chef also. My name is Seth Juarez. This is Channel 9. And we'll see you at the flip side.